Bishop George Browning is with me today, and Bishop George is retired from the Diocese of Canberra and Goulburn in Australia, but retirement hasn't brought an end to ministry by any sense, Bishop.
No, Paul, no. I spoke to Archbishop Rowan Williams at the team conference in Johannesburg in 2007 and said I reached the age of retirement, didn't want to go rhubarb as my major profession, thought that I'd take on a parish in the UK. So he encouraged me to write a letter, which he gave to all the English bishops. And Bishop of Salisbury, David Stancliffe, was the first one to respond, egged on by his dean, June Osborne, who was at the STEAM conference. So I'm now running a benefice with seven parishes in Dorset.
Marvellous. But you've also got an involvement in one of the newer Anglican networks,
I convened the Environment Network, which was commenced in 2003, really, in Pretoria, South Africa. And we met again in Canberra. I've hosted a meeting in Canberra in 2005. And it's a massive undertaking because, arguably, the environment is the global issue of the 21st century. So what can a few volunteers do scratching around like hens in the dirt, you might well ask. But however, on the ground, what members of faith communities are doing around the world is quite extraordinary and courageous, and from large business projects to small volunteer projects of recycling, planting trees, eco-congregations, etc.
Now, an eco-congregation, how would you define that? What does that mean?
Well, it's a congregation, the one that I established myself, is a congregation that is based around eco-principles. It's a Christian community. It has its own building. It has a large acreage around it, which is being developed ecologically. The worship style is creation-based rather than necessarily salvation-based in the narrow sense of salvation. And the congregation, most members of the congregation have found a way back to God through environmental issues, having been somehow disenchanted with the church in the past for whatever reason or another.
Is there a formal mandate that the Environmental Network has within the Anglican
Yes, it's, for, it, it's established by the Anglican Consultative Council, and of course our theological mandate is the fifth mark of mission. And so we're talking here about something that's core business to the church, and I see one of my main roles is to convince the church that it is our core business, because unfortunately there are a number of church leaders and provinces who frankly are not grappling with the issue at all, and they give as a lame excuse, well, it's not core business. And so that's our theological mandate, and our moral mandate is probably the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals, and because to put it in a nutshell, it's the rich of the world who are causing the problem and it's the poor of the world who are suffering the consequences, which is a fairly major moral issue.
To say the least.
Yeah.
How does the Environmental Network work? Do you hold regular meetings? Do you do it through email?
It's mainly through email, and our secretariat is a busy parish priest in Canada who lives on Vancouver Island, Ken Gray, a very fine guy who's here. And we're doing our best to work through a representative from every province. Unfortunately, at the moment, we only have about 50% of the provinces on board. That's understandable because in many places they are so pressed with other issues that it is very difficult. But we would love to have a representative from all the provinces, particularly from the developing world, because they are the ones who are suffering the most, and we need to hear their voice and to respond to their needs. The basic need, really, globally, is to move away from a carbon-based economy. But that's putting it in a very global form, but that form then has an implication on the ground in every corner of the world.
How does an individual Anglican or a parish, how do they get connected with the Environmental Network?
Well, if they have a representative in their province, then that representative has a website and they connect through there to the rest of the communion, and it largely depends upon the energy and enthusiasm of a person who's paid to do something else and who does this as their passion. So our aim is to assist people theologically, assist people with their worship program, assist people with their teaching program, quite apart from assisting people with with actual environmental programs. Perhaps one of the largest ones, of course, is the UK one, which has the title Shrinking the Footprint, which has the almost the patronage of the Bishop of London, Richard Charteris, and James, the Bishop of Liverpool, are the two great pushers there.
Marvellous. The way that the environmentalists capture the imagination goes far beyond the church in societies in general. And I'm wondering, do you see this as a means of evangelism, where Christians and non-Christians can get together in terms of conversations about the environment and see that as a way of cooperation, either in terms of interfaith or some other way of moving forward?
Oh, absolutely. And it shouldn't be evangelism in the sense that we want an outcome out of it in terms of bums on the seats.
You betcha.
However, there are bums on the seats. And the younger generation finds it quite easy to relate to the church and to the faith through this issue and to find opening up for them a great vision of the activity of God. But I think in the West, I hope you won't think this is heretical, but in the West we have focused far too much on individual salvation as if that is primarily what the Bible speaks about, but actually I don't think it does. And the Bishop of Durham's done a fair bit of work on this recently, and that salvation is about the redemption of the whole of the created order. And Jesus came to redeem the whole created order. In the beginning was the Word was with God, etc. Everybody knows the prologue of the Gospel according to St. John. So it's actually recovering our central ground here. It's not a peripheral matter. And as Bishop of Liverpool reminds people, our very name, Adam, which is the name for men and women, comes out of Adamah, the earth. We are actually, that's our identity, we're people of the earth. And if we're estranged from the earth, we're estranged from our true identity and purpose in life.
In terms of the environmental network, are there a few unsung heroes? Are there people who you've seen or witnessed to who have made a pretty substantial difference in what they're doing?
I've already mentioned to you Sally Bingham, Canon Sally Bingham from Grace Cathedral in the United States. Her program is astonishing in its breadth and its size. I'm in awe of her capacity to pull it off. There are unsung heroes in Kenya and in Nigeria and in South Africa and in townships. I every 2 years I spend time in a poor community somewhere in the world, and I'll say always, there are people working on environmental projects in these small communities. It may be to do with water and making water more accessible. It may be simply a clean-up project, because amongst the poor, there's often huge environmental degradation that contributes to their poverty. It may be a major recycling program which they're involved with. So I think the real unsung heroes are people with vision in the poorer communities of the world, and within the Anglican Church, there are many, many of them.
Bishop George, thank you. We're very grateful for the opportunity to come and hear a whole lot more about the Anglican Environmental Network.
Well, it's as I said to the network meeting this morning, we're a little bit different to the other networks, because the other networks have a niche, if you like. If you're running schools or university colleges, you have that niche. Even women have a niche, as in 50% of the population. We have no niche. We are actually the whole of it. We are the global human family, and together we'll survive on the face of the earth, or together we'll perish. And I might conclude by saying that what drives me more than anything else, apart from my faith, is my grandchildren. And every day I do my best to imagine what this world's going to be like in 50 years' time. And sometimes it fills me with horror, but it motivates me to want to do something about it. And I think those of you who are listening to this interview who've got grandchildren, get motivated.
There's the word. Thank you for your passion about this.
Nice to talk to you.
God bless.